On this week's show, Robots in the Field with Tyler Williams from DPR Construction. All right, Nathan Wood, it's been a while. It's good to have you back on the show, buddy. How you doing?
Been a minute. Conference season, man. You've been traveling. I've been traveling a little bit, not as much as you.
Conference season, baby. Getting those frequent flyer miles. Just came in hot today, so I'm glad we can get this one done. And then I'm probably going to take me a nap. There we go. Tyler Williams, it's good to have you back on the show, man.
I'm super excited to be back on. It's been a little bit, but there's been a lot happening since, so excited to talk it out.
Yeah, it was really cool. Tyler approached me, said, hey, man, we've been doing some more stuff, and you want to talk about it? And I was like, let's do it. He goes, you want to send it? I was like, full send, baby. Let's go. Anybody that can do that, Nathan, you know that they're ready for the show. Like, let's go full send. We'll see what happens. We'll land it. If y'all don't know what going full send means, well, look up an old ski movie or something and you will figure it out. Before we jump into it, Tyler, though, you guys know the drill. Follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/@thecontechcrew. Get all our shorts. Remember to subscribe to the newsletter and find out what's going on in the world around you.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
So Tyler, we had you on, but catch people up on, you know, who you are and what you do at DPR.
So Tyler Williams, I work for DPR Construction. I get the honor to work on their corporate innovation team with a focus on field innovation, and now robotics. The robotics side is new and kind of why I reached out to you, because it's been something under construction and development for a little bit. We were playing with some robots over the years, you know, Dusty, Canvas, like, you know, the kind of the common ones. What I do at DPR, though, is really focus on trying to get innovations, solutions, hardware, tools, and like industry methodology that we can bring back to like positively impact our frontline projects and teams. So what I've been trying to do with the new robotic side of it is blend those and bridge the gaps. It seems that, you know, robots are cool. They're super shiny. There's a lot of promise there, but they do all the easy stuff. And I think that's the difficulty, is really trying to find how we can marry up our frontline folks with these robotics. And I like to call them cobotics, so that we really start to like work with them versus for them or against them, or like just straight up doing what they do.
That's awesome. Let's take a step back. So all of us have had that, you know, dive into robotics, and we've seen it all out there and, you know, starting to become a landscape. What were some of the things that you went in thinking it might do and then realized pretty quickly? And what were some of the things that maybe surprised you in that process?
I actually had like a front row seat to kind of predecessor doing this. And what I found was we were looking too broadly. And we're really focusing on like, how do we bring our frontline folks with us on this journey? So we were, I think, a little aggressive, and we were pushing a bit of a robotic agenda versus stepping back going, hey, what are we comfortable with first and foremost? What is kind of our strategy moving forward so that we can kind of have some guardrails behind that? So what I developed was a strategy that looks a little different, but it's basically highlights, let's use robots to reduce ergonomic strain on our frontline workers, improve their experience. They get to go home, you know, not be as sore or broken or have that shoulder hanging at the end of the day. And then how do we improve efficiency for our overall operations? So like we were able to use that as a filter to go, okay, you know, a lot of these robots claim to do a lot of things, have tons of KPIs in a lab, but yet they just do a really long straight wall. Okay. That is our money, right? Those, especially based on some contracts, we make really good money on those long, tall, short wall, you know, long, tall, smooth walls. We don't want to give that just to anybody. So that was something that kind of jumped out at me right away. And we also needed to do like more education on robots. Like, here's what's out here. Here's the robots that you may be familiar with. Here's what's coming. Here's what you don't need to worry about yet. And then again, what are you comfortable with? And I wasn't super surprised at what I found out, kind of backing up a little bit. I was a union carpenter. I've been a superintendent. I worked with my dad since I was 15. So I got a pretty, you know, in-depth experience when it comes to like what the field folks want. And they're my people. Like, that's my favorite place to be, is in the field, talking to them, working with them, seeing what's going on, and trying to understand like, how can what I do here on the innovation team impact you in a positive way? It's been exciting. I've learned a little bit and then not surprised at a lot of the stuff.
So I guess for those less familiar with DPR, I know they're both a general contractor and there's self-perform work, I think, but drywall and concrete, probably some others. So when it comes to robotics, how much of your focus has been on the self-perform groups, on the trade craft versus like GC operational staff type stuff?
That's a great question. And that's been something I had to work really hard to do, is get alignment from our, we call them SPW, but self-perform work group leaders. So we have a leader in each of our 5 operating regions. So working with them, interviewing them, their leadership below them, to go, hey, what do you guys want? Do you want teleoperation? Do you want more cobotics? Do you want material movers? Do you want humanoids? And I was able to take all of that, aggregate it to be like, this is what our people are telling us. Like it or not, we're not ready for, you know, humanoids on our projects. We're interested in teleoperations for high risk or like stuff that'll kill you type tasks. But other than that, like, let's think about cobotics and how can we use a cobot to, you know, really like augment the experience of a frontline worker, to like help them by working with them, kind of not for them.
Yeah. Explain. So people listen in your like teleoperations, that's, you know, remote controlling a robot of some sort into, you know, possibly an area with, you know, noxious gas or confined space. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Working at heights would be another scenario. Actually, something that we're really excited that we've been working with is a company called Hard Hat Robotics. And we have an internal electrical company called EIG, and they've been working with our innovation team and Hard Hat Robotics with a robot that you can literally use. I believe it's a PlayStation controller. I'm not a gamer, so I don't know if it's PlayStation or 64 or whatever. But anyways, you can stand at a safe distance, perform that large form breaker, the de-energization stuff from a distance outside of a room, and have that robot be right there. We've interviewed some of our, you know, EIG folks and trade partner electricians, and they're like, hey, if you've ever done an electrical shutdown, right, and you got to put on a KV suit and put a hook around your waist and hope to hell nothing happens, he goes, that's not a day you look forward to, right? You have a butt pucker all day, your stomach has a knot in it, and you're just hoping in one hand.
So I explained this to somebody the other day because it was something I didn't know about either. And they about fell over that a human still does that in this world. And I am with you. I mean, truly explain it, but it is, somebody puts on a suit. There is a person, imagine the person, the way it was explained to me by this electrician was, you remember when in the old days when you're acting and they used to bring the hook out and hook them off when they went wrong, you know, it's a hook like that. And they're ready in the suit and turning off or turning on. And it's in both situations, right? You're either making it hot or you're decommissioning it. And there's a chance it blows and you go with it, unless that person pulls the hook and pulls you out.
Well, that, and or if it hits you, their job is to pull you off that breaker,
right? Because
it essentially magnetizes you to it.
Oh, so, God. See, I didn't even know that. So it magnetizes you to it.
Oh, and you're just freaking stuck there, to your point, right? It's like, we're still doing this? Like, does this make sense?
This is 2025, right? We do have robots. Okay, this is a great use. Because if the robot gets magnetized and goes to it, like, it's an expense. But yeah, it's all replaceable.
So I just wrote a proof of concept plan for, like, we're trying to create like a champion program for this robot, where we want to use it in the Bay Area, where anytime we have, you know, energizations, let's put it on a schedule. Let's get the robot out there. We're not as worried about cost, right? We're using innovation funding to really test this and push the safety component and try to create like a new behavior. Like, if we're going to do a large frame breaker, we should be scheduling this with a robot or, you know, another solution that's similar. But like, let's take our people out of that high risk situation that he kisses his wife and his family goodbye and goes, hey, hope to see you tonight. Like, we're 2025. We can do better.
That should not ever be the day of anybody that we're dealing with in our world is like, I may see you tonight. That's just not how it should be. So
this is exactly why, you know, we're talking about teleoperations or autonomous type robots for these high risk scenarios, right? We need more solutions that help us work at heights in this teleoperated type idea, right? That's another leading cause of injury, right? Is material moving, working at heights, energization, pressure testing, confined space. Like, all right, we can start focusing some solutions in that direction. And that's what I'm hoping this strategy does, is like raising our hand going, this is how we're looking at this. If you can help us, we'll help you by, you know, getting it on our projects, really starting to talk about this, just like we're talking about Hard Hat.
Yeah, talking about Hard Hat. I don't know if you've seen this, but I had him on the show. Have you seen Quazo yet?
The scaffolding one? Yeah, we've tested that as well.
I mean, when he was, I was like, yeah, this is cool and all. And then he's showing me how people build it. And I'm like, oh man, okay, this is way better. this is way better.
We would consider that almost like a cobotic, right? Because that is not really doing the work, but it's decreasing the strain on our workforce, right? It's allowing us to do the smart stuff. Yes. So, and that's key, is like, hey, let's have something else do the hard stuff and the heavy lifting or the high risk activity, and let our people do the thinking stuff, like the smart things.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the key. And, you know, we can cover humanoids, but, you know, we all know what they are. That's Atlas that you've seen out there and some of the others. And, you know, those are cool. But I say this all the time, like, this human body is like the most poorly engineered thing. Like, why would you build this as a robot to try to do anything? Like, you build robots to do specific things. And they are not cheap, and I don't need them going and get, you know, I saw that one flipping off the scaffolding and then going and getting the tools I need. I don't really think that's a good use case for my money.
It's sure cool looking. It gets a lot of YouTube things, but like, yeah, that's.
And I said this in another show, that's where we're going to get the robotic arm that is becomes a cobot, right? That comes to cobiotics, right? Those are cool side things. We need an MIT out there trying to build an Atlas and trying to build the other things, because eventually byproducts of what they're doing become, you know, regular use cases for us. So that's separate, but focus on the cobots. What other cobotics do you see? We just talked about Quazo kind of, you know, being that they were on the show. What else have you seen?
That's a perfect one. There's another couple that are like material movers, a company called Movex Innovation. They're up out of Canada. I've spent a lot of time with these guys. They have these tracked machines that you can use a very simple remote control to forward, back, side to side. They'll lift like 6,000 pounds and will fit through a doorway. So it's like, wait a second. Like, so you're telling me I can put a, you know, a stack of drywall and move it up to the second floor? I'm telling you, yes, that can actually be done. I could put a Connex on this thing and move it. Yeah, that happens too. So you can put a dumper on them and like take debris and material and whatnot. So we tested one of these out of our data center project, one of our data center projects out in Arizona. And we put it out there and really just kind of said, feel free to use this however you all want to. And it was out there for a little bit, and the form factor being different is a little bit of a barrier, because we're so used to a grade all, a forklift or whatnot, and think that's the most efficient way to do things. In fact, we've been doing some studies with Stanford and others to like kind of prove the point that it's not exactly. So where I'm going with this is we left it on site, basically gave anybody who wanted to use it the keys and said, hey, go for it. We had a team that all of a sudden goes, hey, we got to grout the base of these concrete tilt-up walls. It's always a pain in the ass because you haven't backfilled the foundation yet. You got to get the grout and the mixer and the tub of water all the way down on that footing. So they strapped all that stuff onto one of these Movex machines, and it crawls up over the dirt berm, gets right on the foundation footing, and they're able to do their work right alongside them. And it was one of those things. We didn't teach them that that's how you had to use it, but trying to highlight that there's so many opportunities that we don't even know like what to do with it, but you got to get it on the site for them to start playing with it. And then that's what it came of it. So it was like perfect opportunity.
Well, and that's what I like about that one. Cause the whole time I was thinking, man, like all these examples are risk driven, can be like the confined space, the, like the kind of one-off things. But I think your cobot examples are mostly all ones where it is mainly just an efficiency driven. I mean, sure, there may be like some ergonomics, other, you know, safety efficiencies, but mainly it's about efficiency. And that is rare to define innovations where it is truly an efficiency driven ROI. It's almost always like a risk prevention based ROI is the only way you can
risk seems
to
be the low hanging fruit, because you know we don't put a price on safety, which is good, but then it still has to prove some efficiency or an improvement experience for it to really go to the next couple levels. There's another one called Vita Inclinata. It's a crane lifting spreader bar essentially that has fans on fan motors on either side of it, and it's again remote controlled, hangs on the end of a crane, and you have 100% control of your load from the time it lifts off the ground to the time you land it. So essentially, don't tell OSHA, but you wouldn't have to use a tagline, and or your tagline is short and you know won't get caught up on somebody's foot, whatnot. So we tested this out in California on a project, and we demobed a tower crane with it, essentially taking a 3-pick to 1, and we're able to land it with precision in between 2 brand new finished buildings. So like trying to identify that, hey, we don't have to like lift this hard way anymore and have 5 people on a tagline, you know, on the ground, 500 feet, you know, long, trying to maneuver this thing. You know, we're almost done with the tallest tower in Texas. And Vita went out there right at the end because we were having so many wind stoppages, because you're 79 stories up in the air, the wind picks up. So they were able to operate their tower crane and move formwork and whatnot up to like 35 miles an hour, and able to keep the project going. So like that's an efficiency thing. And we hit the safety button on that one too.
Yeah, my BIM and VDC folks, so you know, like it's cool to see a crane work, but you're really not realizing the forces that are exerted on a crane and the different, and those taglines, I mean, those are humans on the end of them. And like you said, it's kind of like the line on a boat. Like if it gets wrapped around an ankle, you're going with it. Again, this is not safety. And this device, this robot is wind driven and is countering the wind with the propeller. I don't want to call them propellers. Yeah. But to stabilize it.
They're like wind propellers. But yeah, they're inside. They're like a little thing. They just spin.
Yeah, it's almost like
out of Colorado.
It's like part of a drone. That's where I've seen them. They're from here. And they're like part of a drone that somebody's, you know, again, somebody probably said, hey, like this drone thing probably could help with that. And then they were like, oh, let's do it this way. That type of precision. I mean, cranes are so dangerous.
It's the most dangerous tool on the job. You take that and a ladder, right? And you're like, you can't wait till you're done with the ladders and man, you just wait for that day. You're like, oh, crane's done. You're just like, whew. Always just kind of like take a deep breath.
That is a good example, because you mentioned there that the OSHA, I guess, requires that tagline has to be there for, you know, again, a historical safety reason. And it's like, how often do you encounter these situations where the actual better, safer, you know, potentially option is not allowed per the safety regulation or per some other standard?
We actually invited Cal OSHA out to review what we were doing, and we had to keep the tagline on. That's no argument there. We were able to shorten it, but we were able to prove that, hey, this is a safer alternative because you have control the whole time. And like you increased efficiency. You didn't have stuff slamming into the side of the building, and it even had like a GPS position hold, so that, you know, say you're using like you're flying curtain wall, right? You could lock it in, and after that pick, it would orientate itself and you would be able to just fly right back in. It was really sweet.
Yeah. And that's just a level of precision. And I think OSHA, just given the current environment, is actually pretty interested in they want to make sure they have a hand in watching it. And like I said, you got to have the line still right now, but I see a future very quickly where it's like, okay, if you, and they'll put, you know, I don't want to call it like you would for electrical and whatnot, but it'll have to be rated. But once it's rated and once it's approved, it's like if you're using it, and it's going to have fail safes built into it where it's going to shut itself down. And by the way, tagline doesn't have that.
This is what we had to communicate with our risk teams, because they were like, whoa, what happens if it spins out of control? Have you ever seen a load spin out of control because nobody's holding on to it? I think we got double safety here versus like hope in one hand
and yeah, the rest in the other. So these are the cool. I mean, this is great, because we hear a lot about robotics, but you don't hear a lot about the value in different areas it's going. What else have you seen? What else has got you going? This is awesome.
So another one that we've been working pretty tight with is Ergo Robotics. So they kind of came, or the, I think they're really more focused in like curtain wall install, but from the interior of your building. So they kind of work the suction cup, like kind of picture a pallet jack that you can drive up to the side of the building and then it like extends out and helps you. But what we had a team out in the Northeast, this guy named Bruce Hamilton had his crazy idea saying, hey, could you guys help us fab up a different connection method so that we can use these to install our prefabricated wall systems? And they were like, we sure can. So we've used those in quite a few projects in the Northeast and been entertaining it out in the Northwest. Because you essentially can build your wall on the ground or offsite is what we do a lot of times, ship it on there, and then we can drive it in versus trying to, you know, 20 guys to move this thing, right? But you can sheath it, you can install your electrical, and then use this thing to install, stand it up, make it safe, and then as you make your connections.
Yeah, I mean, that's so cool. That's one of the problems we've seen with our ability to offsite fabricate, right? Is it creates a new installation problem. But man, this is great that this, you know, now you've got a robot. And I love the process that you guys are using here, right? You're giving them you're backing it with innovation, right? So the dollars are coming differently, right?
Less risk, right? You're just like, we'll help you.
Less risk, but more of a, hey, listen, I'm not costing this to your job. So you don't have to show me tomorrow that you're getting some sort of ROI on whatever it might be. It's like, hey, we think you've got some problems we don't know about. We've got some really great products that are doing certain things, but let's put them in front of you. And then they're like, hey, whoa, we got an idea. And that's what I love about this. It's craftspeople mentality, right? They're like, fabricate me an arm that'll do this. They think that way.
I think too often we just assume that they're not going to tell us this, but that's like one of my favorite things to do. In the Northwest, we do this thing every year called Safety Days, where we bring in all of our craft from the Northwest over 3 days. And we basically run them through a bunch of different safety trainings, you know, lockout, tagout, confined space. You know, this year we did emergency water shutoff. Like, what do you do if something happens? And they called me. So I got the opportunity to present on innovation and robots and whatnot. And like, hey, you craft, are you thinking about these? Are you aware of this? Like, if you like this, call your foreman, call your superintendent and say, hey, we want to try this because we're material management is difficult, right? It's very strenuous on our people. How often I hear like, oh man, we'd use that Movex thing to haul debris all day, every day. But it's like, and I hear it often, we don't know what we don't know. So I spent a lot of time this last year. I think I did like close to 14 presentations around the country to different work groups, just highlighting on here's what's available. Here's what we've highlighted. Here's what we're kicking the tires on. Here's what we've learned. And it's super fun because just like that, hey, what if it did this? That's like my favorite freaking thing to hear is like,
well, isn't that the biggest challenge in the industry though, is like getting people to stop doing it the way they've always done and to like take time to ask the, I mean, that's what I always loved about DPR innovation, that whole culture and like the role you get to be in is like, it's your full-time job, but for everybody else, I mean, like, DPRs, I don't know how many projects you got going at one given time, but it's like, that's a big task to like get this stuff in front of people. I mean, yeah, like, is it more of a push mentality where everything has to be pushed to the start of job sites or, you know, hopefully you're seeing more of a pull where folks are asking for stuff.
The push thing is not my style. I've tried that in the first couple of years. Like, hey, we got to do this. We got to do this. I tried to push Vita a lot and I got instantly like pushed to the side. I was like, well, that didn't freaking work. Okay. So then what I did was education, highlight more content out there and just try to like expose as many people to the ideas that we were looking at as possible. And then I started getting phone calls. And then like Arizona this year, they called me so many times this year. Hey, we got this project that we really don't know how, because the government shut down FFAA. We can't get a helicopter in to land this air unit. What do you got? And I'm like, I don't know, but I'll be damned if I don't try to find something. And like, that's that pull we're really looking for. We create a raving fan. Somebody knows to call our innovation team, help solve a problem. They know we got some money in our pockets and they start like leveraging that. It's really fun. There's one more, I can't name the name of this super, super awesome cobotic company. What I love about their approach, and I really can't even tell you what it is, but know that it's coming and it's coming soon. They've really focused to like work hip to hip with us and our frontline folks. So they've invited our foreman and some of our SPW leaders to their warehouse, to their lab space over and over. I bet some of our guys have been there close to 6 times. And they'll iterate a little bit of something, and then they'll have our guys come validate and test it. But what's so awesome about this company is they listen, and then they make those adjustments really fast. So they have this field-focused cobotic approach meant to decrease the ergonomic strain on our workforce, knowing they do that, they understand, and then if our people understand that they're listening and will make these adjustments, like the money is going to come. Like the utilization is going to happen. Because we talked about a second ago, these guys are like, what if you put it on this? Just so happens, they probably can. So again, I want to kind of challenge and hopefully influence other robotic companies or just solution providers to really, like, you can do this with other companies besides DPR, but we're open to it. Call us up. If you got something, we'll sit and listen to you. And I'll tell you don't get mad at me when I tell you how it goes. But know that that's valuable feedback, kind of like currency. And we want this to be like a two-way partnership street, because we're not solution developers. We're builders. We'll let somebody else do that, but we'll help you get there. And that's going to help you, you know, make your mark on the industry as well.
Well, and this highlights the difference, right, between the software innovation companies and the tech innovation companies and the robotics innovation companies. They have to have a different mentality. You know, I've talked to a few of them, and I know a few that came out, and they came out thinking they were going to build some sort of device, whether it's a robot or other, and they thought they were going to do it the way you do a SaaS company or the way you do one of the new AI companies. It's like, nah, that is not how this rolls. So to come across the companies that really have that, because they're in a manufacturing business, right? The idea is you iterate, design, and come up with a design, and then you're going to produce millions of that widget. You know, you might have 10 widgets or 15 widgets in the end as you look at what it does, but they're pretty much the same. And it's a totally different sales, development, and growth process. So it's great to see them come in with that type of, stalwart hold on, okay, this is how we're going to do it. Because you're right, once they hit the jackpot, they hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way you build
a raving fan. Yeah. That's a new tool, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to pay attention to it.
Yeah. And I love this idea. You know, like there's so many of our craftspeople are thinking about, you know, like I only have a crew of 10 now, right? I used to have a crew of 20. And so 10 people could be going and getting materials and delivering those things. And, you know, I could be, and I don't have that anymore. So now a Movex can be carrying everything along with me, and we can be, you know, continuing to be productive and keeping the materials near us and keeping the weight off our backs. We don't have those quote unquote apprentices to throw that dirty work at anymore necessarily. We got to have them on the tools and working with us now. So it's a great opportunity to get the most out of the labor force that we have at the things that they're really great at.
I had one of our leaders tell us a little while ago that rather than humanoids or some of these advanced technologies that are autonomous, there's so much more we can do with our people. So just like what you highlighted, right? Let's refocus and rebalance our people to those thinking tasks. I want them doing the layout, working with the Dusty, right? Making sure that that's installed per plan, per contract, right? Making sure we're meeting our schedule while not a non-person, right? This material shows up next to me. I don't have to twist and carry it for 100 yards, twist my ankle because there's a hole open and whatnot, or somebody didn't pick it up. So like, let's find some robots that can clean up stuff, right? Like that's not a real big thinking task, right? Like something else can do that. And I'd love for somebody to focus on that, because we spend so much money on somebody pushing a broom, picking up scraps, putting it in a debris bin, then the inefficiency of bringing it to a dumpster, dumping it, coming back. Like we don't need to be doing that.
It's not a great use of our time. And I mean, I could just see like even starting with the Movex going along with you. So at least you're not doing
like
all those processes.
Right? Yeah,
follow me type. You know, I'm
with
just
a little
thinking,
sweeper. I could definitely see like the Jetsons little, like just sweeping it in the middle.
Well, I'm just thinking,
the
yeah,
little
like
arm that just puts it in the back. Yeah.
You got the thing that'll make the drone follow you when you're biking or skiing or whatever. Like that, all that technology, like my silly camera will follow my face. Like I'm pretty sure I can set this thing up to follow me around and like do certain things. So I'm with you. We can't let you go without talking a little bit about that two-letter acronym that's killing everybody out there right now. It was really funny, Tyler, because when we had you on in 2023, AI was in the title. So we did even talk about it. We were talking about AI back then, but
pioneer.
Yeah. So fast forward, what's your take on it? Since you're so into robotics and into really helping the field, what's your take on just where AI is and how it's going to impact construction?
I think it's definitely going to impact construction, just like it's going to impact all things. Something, and this is my opinion only, because I love swinging a hammer, kind of talk about, do we need it? Like, just because it's available, is it necessary? Right? Like, can we argue that everything is better because of it? I don't know. Maybe there's some efficiencies. I just read this thing this morning about Amazon laying off 14,000 workers because they're preparing for generative AI to come in and do middle management stuff. Meaning, right, they're coming in doing reporting, they're coordinating, they're doing some of these low-level decision-makings. And to be totally honest, that doesn't like hurt my feelings, because that means that our frontline workers, they're going to be okay for a while, because AI doesn't build buildings. It'll be a long time before you see anything like that swinging a hammer. I've been in these meetings. I've seen the demos. We're a ways from it, and I'm okay with that. But I do have concerns that project managers, right? Estimators, you know, rebar, you know, shops people, like all that stuff, that is getting faster and faster for AI to go through that, comb them pretty soon. Like, do you really need a human in the loop on some of that stuff? Or can you just trust it? Cause it's getting smarter and smarter each time. So I guess I'm feeling a little bit more confident for our frontline workers, but I'm also super concerned about, you know, those construction management, those kids that are going, hey, I'm going to Boise State to be a construction management degree and come out as a project manager. Like, is that going to be as valuable as that tradesperson? I can't say that it will.
You know, it's funny that I was at a show recently. I was at Unbound for Bluebeam, and we saw Duncan Wardle, and Duncan said the two most valuable tools in your tool set moving forward with this revolution are going to be a craft and creativity. And I think those two are key. I will say this. I'll go back to the, you know, and I don't know Amazon and exactly what they were doing and why they were doing it and saying that was coming. But if you have seen anyone who's trying to use AI right now for middle management, you are seeing the most inefficient, chicken with your head cut off situation that you will ever see. Like, it is not ready. And to your point, do we need it? Yeah, there's parts where we should use it to do certain things. But I mean, the number of wasted cycles I am seeing being created because somebody thinks they've found the way, or more importantly, here's the crazy part, they feel as though they have to use it.
That's what I keep hearing, right? Is they're worried about getting left behind.
Yes. So then they use it in a way that's completely inefficient or just creates more work. The simplest explanation of that I give all the time is, do you know how many people are putting bullet points into ChatGPT to create an email to send to somebody who is then taking that email and putting it into ChatGPT to get the bullet points?
Yes.
We just spent a lot of cycles and energy when we could have just sent the bullet points. Like, yeah. Can we just say, hey, like, this is what we wanted to say and be done with it?
But that takes getting over our cultural formality, and that's a whole like cultural thing, right? Which is what makes it so hard. It's not just a flip a light switch. It's, yeah, everyone's got to agree that this is how we're going to do it different.
Yes. And that's the thing about it, is I see a lot of busy work created and a lot of checks and balances. And then, you know, what's really funny is I've seen a ton of this agentic work that doesn't actually connect the systems together. So the poor people in the front lines are doing multiple different data entries, using multiple different tools on their jobs to do what they could have just done before simply. you know? And again, there's this belief that AI is going to do it. And it's like, guys, you do realize that, like, when I ask ChatGPT a question, and when I ask most LLMs, unless they're highly prompted and wrappers around them to do specific things, they're non-deterministic. I'm never going to get the same answer twice. We live in construction. We need the same answer every time. What's that flashing detail? What's that waterproofing detail look like? What should this be? I need the answer to be the same every time, deterministic.
Hold on a second there, though, because you said waterproofing, because the proper waterproofing in Florida is not the same waterproofing in Colorado.
So well, no, that's but that's what I mean. I need the fact. I need the fact waterproofing detail for where I am.
Yes,
and so I need the right answer. I need the direct answer every time. I don't need it, you know, to do a lot of this crazy for me. So I'm with you, man. I
but
like
that's the hallucination, right? Because if you didn't give it all the proper context, it will tell you the right thing for the wrong state if you didn't tell it the state it needed to be for.
Thing I'm concerned about too is, like, think of how much time we've spent looking over drawings to understand how we're going to build this building, right? Now, if we have something else combing it, we lose some of that experience. There's that knowledge loss. And then, okay, this is another example. I was affected by Alaska shutdown this last week, right? They couldn't board the plane because their system wouldn't talk to the plane instead of just walking down the freaking jetway and saying, hey, we got this many people. So I want to say we're a little bit reliant. I think there's going to be a knowledge loss. And then we're losing, you know, these journeyman people that have been in the industry for 40 years. Yes. Could AI, like, help us give people more experience, be more efficient? Possibly. But what about doing it the old way when we're not connected, right? Like, you got to use your old tape measure. You know, you got to do a little bit of math and figure out how to cut those stairs or do the roof or what's the angle. I have an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old, right? And I watched my son's handwriting the other day because all they're doing is on their iPads, right? Like, iPad is given to them at school and they're just typing. So, like, just the handwritten notes. And I'm like, just looking at where that probably started to go wrong and where it is now. And I'm like, you're not going to take the iPad from the kid at school. It's far more efficient for the school, but yet we're not able to write a simple note that somebody can read. This is a, you know, super focused point, but, like, if you take that and, like, times it by however many, like, that could be interesting.
There is an opportunity for AI to make us dumber. There's a reason Netflix brought Idiocracy back on the platform.
I watched that
while.
Again. Scary true.
If you have not watched Idiocracy, and I have a 12-year-old and a 17-year-old and 6'7", watch, go to Netflix. That's my thing for you guys right now. Watch it and then, you know, cry a little bit and then do something about it.
And notice what year that film was made.
Yes. And notice what year that thing was made. I'm with you, Tyler. There's an opportunity for us to not understand the skills, not have the basic knowledge, to be dumber if we're not careful. And in the end, that will have a whiplash effect, right? Because we do need to maintain. It's funny because it was like, I was at a college a long time ago with a teacher and saying, listen, I want you to learn how to use plans. I want you to learn how to read plans. I want you to understand how it was done. You can do it. And then I never want you really to do it again, right? I want you to do it in a digital format. I want you to use the new tools that you can use to read and to draw and to count. But you should understand the history of where that came from and why it's called what it's called and why it is what it is in the progression, so that you have an understanding that the craft came from a real pen to paper. Like,
yeah,
this is how it was done. And yeah, we're digitizing it. It's faster. We can draw lines faster. We can do those things faster with, you know, now we can draw in 3D, all those things. But we have to understand the fundamentals. And eventually, someone has to be able to build that. And that's the key. Well, listen, man, we could go on forever. I'm so glad you decided to send it, man. It was great to have you back on the show.
Yeah. No, this is great.
Everybody listening in, if you're one of the groups that Tyler recommended, I'm going to drop it right now. Give me a shout. Let's get you on and let's talk about what you're building. If you're inspired, reach out and connect with Tyler. Tyler, where can they connect with you?
Absolutely. Something that I can't say enough of is, like, our innovation team, that's where we're here, right? what we're here for, is to build these partnerships, help us build a better mousetrap, ultimately impact our frontline people and projects and industry altogether. And there's a lot we can do with our people.
Yeah. So I suggest you reach out. Nathan Wood, thank you for taking the time to sit down today. This was a good one, right?
Oh, man, this was a lot of fun. I always love talking about robots and AI.
Robots, AI, but actually getting stuff done in the field. That's why I always like having Tyler back, because we feel like the rubber's hitting the road when he's here. So good to have you on, man. Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Tyler Williams. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is The Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.